Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us again for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their career, and we talk about topics that will help you become a better leader. This week, we're continuing our conversation with Kim Cameron that we started last week. If you haven't listened to that episode, please go back and listen to the first part. Kim is a professor at the University of Michigan Ross School of Business. He's written 15 books in his career. He's seen as a thought leader in the area of positive leadership. And he has had some great things to share last week, and we're looking forward to continuing our conversation as we finish our conversation with Kim Cameron.
Can you share a little bit of what you found as far as with organizations that you studied?
You bet. Thanks, Mark. In fact, the number one, as you've mentioned, the number one objection to all this positivity business is that, wait a minute, Cameron. I mean, I got stock price I got to worry about. I got performance measures. I got profitability goals. I got sales targets. I got customer satisfaction I got to manage. I mean, look, I don't have time for this soft, soupy, syrupy stuff. You can show me how it affects what I'm held accountable for. I might pay attention, but otherwise, it's irrelevant. It's nice to do, but I don't have time. So my entire career the last 20 years has been asking the question, actually, does it pay off in organization performance? Is there any evidence that if you pay attention, what you're held accountable for actually goes up? Turns out there's a lot of evidence that that organization performance, profitability, productivity, those kinds of things, customer satisfaction, quality, innovation, all go up substantially. So we have a number of studies that show that's the case. I mean, big differences, statistically speaking. But there are two or three other anecdotal examples. Let me give you just one story about an organization. We got to know pretty well and were involved in helping them. Prudential Financial is the organization, big multinational financial services organization. Their retirement business was in trouble, floundering. And they knew that if you're floundering in retirement business and finance, you're in trouble because that's where people put their money. Mm-hmm. They decided in order to be competitive in the marketplace, they had to merge with another financial services retirement business. They picked Cigna. They said it was like merging the Yankees and the Red Sox. One in New York, one in Boston. They didn't get along at all.
Sure.
Contrasting cultures and so on. But they did it. The CEO of Cigna became the CEO of the merged company, Prudential Retirement. His name is John Kim. John essentially, I'm going to make a very long story, about a four-year story shorter. John Kim became the CEO, and he called us out and said, come help me. We're going to implement positive leadership, positive practices, positive culture. Here's what he said. I'm going to paraphrase what he said, but it's close to the quotation. He said, look, when I took over this, it looked like this was just positivity, smiles. I mean, soupy, syrupy stuff. What I learned, however, is that this was a major change, a culture change, a process change. There was no end, no final grade. It's the way we do business. He said, we implemented processes and practices, the objective of which was, and here's what's interesting. He said, we want to have our customers and employees consider us to be the best in the technical aspects of our business, but then by succeeding above all understanding. That was his phrase. I mean, we're so good, nobody can understand how we got this way. Well, he said, we just implemented a bunch of practices, and here's what happened. Not only was there a successful merger, they kept 95% of their customers, which was a big shock, but it became the largest business in Prudential, currently is. They improved their financial performance by a factor of 10. The growth rate was 20% per year in an industry where the growth rate is 3 or 4%. So times 5 or times 6 industry average and so on. Well, one of the people that John hired to help with the merger was a guy named Jim Malazzi. Jim was then, 3 or 4 years later, made the president of another one of the Prudential businesses. When he took over, they were losing $70 million. The year before, they'd lost $140 million. So if you just lost $210 million in 2 years, you're in big trouble. I got a new CEO.
Sure.
Jim essentially did the same thing. He said, look, when I took over, we were in trouble. So I said, we have to focus on what we can do rather than what we can't do or don't do. We've got to focus on the positive parts of who we are rather than the negative parts. And he said, when we did that, it just changed everything in this organization. And so as it turns out, they went from 70 million in the red to 20 million in the black in 12 months. Two times business plan. Again, industry average times four industry average. Warren Buffett's company bought that business, by the way, after 4 or 5 years. Stock price was double the parent company. I mean, and they won the J.D. Power Award for service and so on. In other words, just in that one place, financial services, where you'd say of all the places, positivity would not work is a bottom line. I got to have outcome. I got to have profitability. That would be the least likely place it works, but it was a dramatic success when they took this seriously. So that's just one story of how bottom line impact is you have to worry about that. You have to be held accountable.
So as you're managing teams, and one of the things that I think a lot of times when people are doing reviews of employees, they're focused on, you know, maybe what's gone wrong during the year. This whole positive leadership, how does that impact as far as how somebody should be conducting reviews and managing their team?
It's a good question because all of us know bad news sells. Negative information has big impact. I mean, there really is a lot of information about that. If I'm in an interview and I say something screwy, it's going to take seven statements that are impressive to overcome the one that's not. So bad is stronger than good. So because that's the case, we need to focus on or emphasize, highlight the good parts, the positive parts. So there's all kinds of suggestions about how that might be done. There's a kind of a classic study done by a colleague of mine in which they simply took a group of individuals. These were all top management team people. And they were measuring outcomes in their own organizations. They brought them together, actually at my university, had them sit in a room for one day in a room surrounded by one-way mirrors. On the other side of the mirrors were doctoral students observing these people working, coding the communication that was going on in the room. Now, in advance, these people had sent data about performance, productivity, customer satisfaction, profitability, and so on, at least those three for sure. Oh, they also had 360 ratings by colleagues. How good a leader are you? All right. As it turns out, they put them in three categories. High performing, if they scored above average on those factors. Average or below average, low performing organizations on those outcomes. Those organizations that were above average on those outcomes, bottom line outcomes, had an average of five positive statements made for every negative statement. Those that did below average had an average of three negative statements for every positive statement. That is just the communication going on in those organizations that were doing especially well. Were much more. This had a highlighting. We're highlighting the positive. Now, to be fair, there is a ratio between about three and about eight. That is about three positives to every negative. If you get above eight, it's too syrupy. You're not worrying about things you should worry about. Below three, you don't get the advantage. So one of the factors that occurred in these teams and in these organizations was they simply said, all right, look, what we have to do is simply focus on what we're doing well as opposed to what we're not, or in addition to what we're not, not as opposed to, but in addition. We got to make sure we don't just focus on problem solving. We got to focus on what's next that we can look forward to that's positive and optimistic. So communication mattered a lot in those studies. And there's a whole bunch of other studies, by the way, that confirm that sort of 3-to-1 or up to 5-to-1 positive to negative ratio. Organizations that do better simply have more positive talk. It's not soupy, it's not syrupy, it's not saccharine sweet. It's making sure we get the results, but we don't do it. I mean, it's an example I heard yesterday from a coach. He's a professional tennis player. He then became the coach of a women's team at a university. And he said, I simply try to help my players think differently instead of, oh, doggone it, I can't forget that, or I need to forget that. He said, I just changed that to, I need to remember that. I changed negative words to positive words. He has these wonderful stories about coaching Olympic athletes. And one of the things that he does is he tries to change them from, doggone it, I screwed up, I didn't do so well. No. What are you going to do that's better next time? Think about the positive. This is, you know, you're competent, you're going to do it next time or whatever. I mean, he's more eloquent in talking about that than I am. And he's trained several Olympic gold medalists, you know. Anyway, communication matters, Mark.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things I've heard you talk about when somebody, as you mentioned, a coach that is trying to get people's performance up to the new level, that you mentioned that, you know, if you watched, I think there's been studies where people have watched videos of themselves doing something poorly or wrong as far as in sports versus watching what you've done right. Talk a little bit about that, the importance of... Yeah.
Sure. I'll give you just another study that was done. This study was done where simply it had to do with bowling, going down to the bowling alley and bowling. So let's assume we have a group of people, we all go down and bowl. And we bowl 3 games because we got to get a baseline about how good we are. Then we're going to film everyone as they bowl. Half of the people, we're going to show them when they made strikes and spares, when they knocked all the pins down. The other half of the people, we will show them only when they did not make strikes and spares, when they essentially failed, didn't do so well. We're going to do that for 1 month, and we're going to challenge people. In fact, I'll say, I will give you $100 if you can improve your bowling score by an average of 10 pins per game. But you only have 30 days to do that. Mm. We got the baseline. How good are you? 30 days later, well, we're going to, so half of the people are watching themselves make strikes. Half of the people are watching themselves fail. We're going to come back together in 1 month. We'll all go down and bowl 3 more games. Turns out those who are watching themselves succeed are significantly more likely to have improved by a score of by 10 pins per game than those who are watching themselves fail. All I have to do is watch myself succeed and my performance actually goes up. So, I mean, that's just one study of quite a few that highlight that notion that success will help us get better. Now, that doesn't mean that we ignore mistakes and problems and issues. It rather means that we put an and between those two alternatives as opposed to an or. That is not problem-centered or positive. It's in addition to those things we have to worry about. I mean, if I got diabetes, I can do push-ups all day long. I got to worry about diabetes. But I can get so consumed and immersed in that my life is in trouble. Mm. And I never do progress.
So if you're looking at the work that you've done around positive leadership, is there a way as far as to figure out, you know, as you're hiring, putting together teams of people as far as to work together, You mentioned the impact of positive energy.
Yes.
Is there a way to figure that out as far as through assessment or through other means that you found that's a pretty good way or
how you interview? That's a great question, Mark. And there is. There was a colleague who's a senior vice president of human resources for a company who learned about this and decided that the challenge was, how are we going to identify positive energizers? If this matters a lot, well, how do we figure out who they are? So the normal way you interview people for jobs is, you know, tell me about a major challenge you had and how'd you overcome it. Tell me about a major conflict and how'd you work through that, and so on. She flipped those questions to be, and I love those questions. I mean, I'm not going to get the wording the way she does it, but I revised them for me. The questions that she asked are things like this. Tell me about an organization that you've absolutely fallen in love with. What was it about that organization that you loved so much? Tell me about a role you performed that you said, man, I love this. What was it about the role? What is it you did that was so good? Tell me about a time that you've helped somebody else fulfill their potential, help them get a lot better. What did you do? How'd you contribute to their success? Tell me about a time when you had just enormous, I mean, surprisingly unbelievable success in your organization. What'd you do? Tell me about that experience. She said, we have a lot of people who can't answer those questions. They've never been at their best. They've never helped somebody else be at their best. They've never fallen in love with any organization. She said, we don't hire them. We only hire those that, yeah, they've experienced peak performance. They've experienced contributing. They've experienced positive energy themselves and recognize it. And, oh, I tell you what, we have, my academic department, this is going to sound very egotistical, but my academic department is normally rated as the number one management department in business schools in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, we publish more than others. We have more fellows in the academy and so on. But the major reason for that is we have three criteria we use to hire people. Number one is you got to be a world-class scholar. No surprise, everybody wants those. You got to add to the scholarly community. Number two is you got to be a good teacher. Of course, everybody wants good teachers. Number three, I think, is a differentiator. You have to be a net positive energizer. You have to add more positive energy to the system than you extract, which means I've got 15 colleagues who have committed to help me get better every day, and I've made the same commitment to them. I mean, we have this enormously collaborative, thriving group who are just dedicated to help each other. I mean, we're all positive energizers. Because we are conscious that that's part of the criteria we want. So we look for those when we hire folks. Works with it.
So let me flip the other side of it. So say that you're a manager or leader and you've inherited a group that has some people that are sucking the energy out of the organization. You know, I know one solution to that, but are there some others that could potentially turn that situation around?
That's a good question. I'm going to violate my at least internal promise that I don't like to share anything that doesn't have empirical evidence. This does not. It's just based on my experience.
Sure.
So I think there are four steps when you encounter black holes, de-energizers. People are just viruses sucking the life out of everybody. Step number one is to give them feedback, direct, objective feedback. That doesn't mean you beat them up. It just simply means, look, here's what I'm noticing your behavior is, here's what it is, and here's what the impact is on our organization. When you're interrupting people, when you lose your temper, when you don't greet people when you come in the office, it has a difficult, I mean, it's a difficult setting. It creates a pall over the organization. Here's a suggested alternative for you. That is, it's supportive feedback. Now, that should be preceded normally by questions. What's going on with you? What don't I understand? How can we help you be better or flourish more in this organization? So understanding them and giving them feedback, that's number one. most of the time that has some kind of an impact. I mean, most people don't want to be curmudgeons or, you know, offend as many people as they can during the day. So feedback is often, if it's objective and helpful, I have your best interest at heart and I'm going to try to help you. All right. If that doesn't work, second step, development, opportunities for alternatives. I mean, you know, you send them to a program or you give them a counselor or you give them a coach or you give them some kind of a person who can assist them along. Because some people say, well, this is just the way I am.
Right.
Well, that's not helpful to you or to us. So let's give you some other alternatives and help you practice. I mean, that's what you do on a football team, for heaven's sake, or a basketball team. I can't dribble with my left hand. Well, let me help you do that because we need a guy who can cross over. You know, if that doesn't work, and almost always it does, if you're sincere and have their interests in heart. Well, I'm going to take a side trip. This happens a lot, by the way, in organizations where people say, look, we got this very valuable person. He's in IT. He's in technology. He's in something. I mean, he's a curmudgeon. He's an engineer. We can't fire this person because he's way too valuable. But boy, he's toxic. So step number three is make them peripheral, meaning isolate the virus. I mean, put that guy in the office, let him tinker around, let him do the IT stuff, let him do whatever he does, you know, let him in the hospital, let him do a surgery, but don't let him infect. Take the microphone out of his hand. Don't let him infect the whole rest of the organization if we can't get rid of him. Now, that's sometimes completely impractical, but, you know, sometimes it's not. Sometimes, all right, let him do his thing, but put him in the basement. Figure it out. If that doesn't work, number four is let them flourish elsewhere. Now, that doesn't mean throw them out with the garbage, and that doesn't mean alternative number one. That means I've tried a lot of things. You're not flourishing. We're not flourishing. Let's find a place where you can. Let me help you someplace else. Do what you want to do. It won't be here. But I'm just not going to cut you off. I'm going to say I'm still concerned about having you flourish, but it's not going to be here. Those are my prescriptions, four steps.
No, that's helpful. You've written a number of books. How many books is the total that you've written?
Well, 15 books. But I have to tell you, Mark, I write as a replacement for sleeping pills, so you have a hard time pick up my book.
Yeah. So if you were to choose, I know it's sometimes like trying to choose which child is your favorite, but if you were to choose one of your books that you think would be, that you'd recommend first, I should say it that way, first to read, which one would that be?
Well, it would probably be the book that was originally motivated by having executives say, okay, I'm convinced this stuff works. I'm convinced of the empirical evidence. So how can I do it? And so the book simply called Positive Leadership, written, it's only 120 pages on purpose. It's an airplane ride book. You know, you can read it between here and New York. There's a follow-up to that that just has more specific practices, practicing positive leadership. And I just finished one. It's not out yet. It's just in the publishing process right now, on positive energy, just focusing on that part of positive leadership. But it would be just the positive leadership book, probably.
Great. Well, outside of your books, which I encourage everybody to read, what other books have influenced you? Anything that you would say to a leader, you should read this book?
Yeah, there are wonderful books. There are wonderful books by my colleagues. Bob Quinn has written wonderful books. His first book, I think, that put his work on the map and has had big impact on lots of folks, would be called Deep Change. He's followed up from that book with several others, Building the Bridge as You Walk on It, and
right.
One that's called Lift. You know, so Bob's books are wonderful. Another person who I think has done wonderful work, empirically based work, in positive psychology, per se, is Barbara Fredrickson's book. She had a book simply called Positivity, and her second one was called Love 2.0, has to do with relationships. The grandfather of positive psychology is Marty Seligman. And Marty's book called Flourish is probably as good a book as there is, just summarizing the psychological part of this. I have colleagues here at the University of Michigan who have done wonderful work because it's organization in focus as opposed to psychologically focused, and talking about the impact on organizations per se. And so one of them would be my friend Wayne Baker, whose latest book just came out a few months ago. It's called All You Have to Do Is Ask. The fundamental basis upon which that book is written is we could get a lot of help from a lot of people. People are willing to contribute. People are generous by nature, but we don't ask. And for a lot of reasons. And so he gives wonderful prescriptions about how organizations and individuals can get better by learning how to ask without feeling like you're being a subordinate or incompetent, you know. So those are some. I'm leaving out a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's always great to hear people's recommendations because there's always, and I've read several of Bob's books, but yeah, those are a great, great books to be reading and applying. Outside of work, Kim, what do you do to recharge?
Well, last night I had a recharging event because we were online with our seven children.
Wow.
We're all over the world. Well, from near Toronto to Monterey, California. Nobody's close to us in Michigan, but we are able to connect by way of Zoom. And it, you know, it's family. It's seven children and wonderful spouses, 24 grandchildren.
Wow. Who are
shame. And that's what life's all about for me.
Yeah, great. Well, this if somebody would want to learn more about your work and your books, is there a good spot for them to head?
I spend very little time on Facebook or LinkedIn, as it turns out, but I'm more than happy. I'm delighted to reply to emails or contacts. So my email is simply my name, Kim, K-I-M, _ Cameron, C-A-M-E-R-O-N, @ UMICH, that's University of Michigan, UMICH.edu. And I'm delighted if people want to reach out. I'm happy to send materials or converse.
Great.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, appreciate your generosity with your time and your thoughts today, and definitely wish you continued success. And with your new book, definitely looking forward to that, and wish you the best.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.